The Case of the House on Black Forest Hill. We live in our safe havens, within the walls of our houses. They are the tiny niches of faraway horizons, clouds drifting along the windows as time passes by. The one is rational, the other spiritual. The gain is with either. Somewhere in between the regular cases which Holmes so brilliantly ended, I experienced the frustration of those cases which seemed to satisfy his explanation, but always seemed to escape my grasp of reality. Those cases would disturb my peace of mind, and even now, in finally writing them down for prosperity, they still send chills up my spine. As my rooms were close to Holmes' Baker Street address, one of the rascals, his little London street punks, would come around to wake me up. They would do this quite indistinctively by throwing some pebbles against my bedroom window or shooting through the neighborhood, "Governor Watson! Governor Watson! The master's calling for you!" I've never been able to teach them to ring the doorbell, something which they, strangely enough, always politely applied in Baker Street. Today was no different, except the rascal added, "Quickly, if you please, it's urgent!" I dressed and left my rooms, as always trying to escape the curiosity of my neighbors, who could not have missed the calling. I hurried down the street towards Holmes' house, again intending to ask him to alter the procedure of these public nuisances. When I entered his rooms, I immediately forgot all about it. The atmosphere in the room was as such that the graveness of the situation could not escape my notice. Two ladies and a gentleman sat on the sofa. Their faces looked pale, as in a continuous shock. Holmes stared out of the window, smoking his long pipe, puffing it with short puffs, as I knew was his habit when being extremely agitated. "We did not know what to do, Mr. Holmes," said the oldest lady. Her hair was grayish, and her dress was a deep purple color, embroidered with some shiny silk piping along the front. It was a strange contradiction, making her look festive and serious at the same time. "You were right, of course, dear Mrs. McIlroy," Holmes turning to me saying, "Watson, these are the McIlroys and their daughter Jenny." I uttered, "How do you do?" The girl must have been in her early 20s, which explained the strokes of gray hair in both her father and mother. She looked shy and withdrawn, simplest of dresses, black to be exact, tied around the waist, which only young women could bear. Father McIlroy looked sturdy, stern look in the eyes, wearing a marine blue coat with yellow striped bands around the cuffs. Inquiry learned he was a steamboat captain. "Could you please repeat your story in the presence of Dr. Watson here? It will help us in creating a broader perspective." I felt flattered by Holmes' qualifications of my present. He was not in the habit of giving me such compliments. Mrs. McIlroy looked a bit embarrassed as she started to speak. "Well, would not like to create the impression that we are a disturbed bunch, believe me. We have pondered over every possible explanations before we came to you for help." "That is quite all right, Mrs. McIlroy," I immediately replied. "Nothing can shock me or make me doubt you, as obviously Holmes has already accepted your story, else I would not be here." Little did I know how hollow my words would prove within a little while, because the story this woman told me shocked me beyond reason. She explained, "As my husband told you, he is a captain of a South Asian steamboat company and frequently is away from home. He travels between London and Shanghai mostly. 1 year ago, we decided that our house in Yorkshire would create too much of a burden for my husband, as during his short stays in England, time was lost traveling back and forth between London and Yorkshire. We decided to move to London, but as we were quite used to living in the countryside, we looked for a house in somewhat of natural surroundings. We were incredibly happy to find the house in the surroundings of a place called Black Forest Hills. The house was a standalone, no neighbors, surrounded by a beautiful large garden, which the former owner called Black Forest Hills, as it had artificially created a hill-type landscape suggestion. We were incredibly happy, even more because the price seemed so ridiculously low. The broker had assured us the low price was the result of the fact that the former owner had to sell quickly because of personal circumstances, nothing to do with the quality of the house. It all looked good and in fine order. This especially pleased my husband, as he is somewhat of a cheapskate. With this last remark, she smiled teasingly at her husband, and he looked back at her with somewhat of a fake expression of being insolvent, but also smiled. It showed husband and wife had a good understanding. During her story, I looked away from Mrs. McIlroy, observing her daughter. While talking about the house, her skin color seemed to turn even more pale, and I could see a tremor in her left hand, as can be observed with those traumatized. For the first time, Mr. McIlroy started to speak, as to relieve his wife from the burden. "I checked everything myself before we moved, Mr. Holmes. As a steamboat captain, I'm very thoroughly where construction, safety, and malfunctions are concerned. Everything was in right order, including the gas pipes and the gas light, the chimneys, the kitchen equipment." McIlroy had a bit of a raspy voice, not noticeably clear. His wife took over again. "Don't strain your voice too much, dear. Relieve your throat. I'll do the talking." Holmes interrupted. "McIlroy had a severe experience, dear Watson. His throat became injured, and you might want to take a look at it later." Mrs. McIlroy replied, "Thank you, but that won't be necessary. Another doctor already looked at it." "It is not as a doctor, Mrs. McIlroy, but as a trained inquirer that I would like Dr. Watson to have a look at it. It might shed some light more on the current matter. But pray do continue." For a moment, Mrs. McIlroy seemed a little insecure, but she braced herself and continued. "The house was a large house, three stories indeed, and with a large attic. We were very happy about it, as my daughter, still unmarried, could live on the third floor, having her own rooms and privacy. The first 6 months we spent in setting up the household, decorating the much larger place to our pleasure, and my husband especially was enthusiastic, as now he could finally bring some of those precious artifacts from China and put them on display in the house. Fine jade statues of Buddhas and many unknown objects inlaid with pearl coatings and lacquer boxes, fit to maintain the finest objects. The wooden floors of the house demanded carpets, yet Chinese carpets we found to be among the most finest in the world. When the house was finished, we were the happiest of family." Holmes kept silent, and I could tell from his face that he was listening intensely. Suddenly, he dropped the questions. "How about the surrounding of the house, Mrs. McIlroy? You said it consisted of artificial hills. Please tell us more about it. We need to know as much as possible." "Maybe your daughter could describe it to us." From Holmes's attitude, I understood that he wanted the young woman to utter herself. She looked down for a minute, and then, as having made a decision, she started to talk. "At first, I loved the surroundings of the garden. It was exceptionally large, almost a small estate. The artificial hill had an interesting plant of pine trees, and there were natural paths leading to various small places where one could sit down on a small wooden bench, enjoying the view. We bought the house at the end of the fall, and when it was finished, it moved into summer. The smell of the pine trees lifted one's spirit, and the small seats were wonderful places of meditation. After some time, I began to notice small peculiarities on the hill. Holmes gave me a hint to be extra observant, so I watched the girl more astute. She continued, "I am being seated in one of the outlets, and then suddenly all sounds would fall silence. Mr. Holmes, not just silent, but uncanny silent." I looked at the girl and I could see her upper lip trembling. The muscles around her mouth were tensing more and more, and a weird grimness it looked, as if the mouth was being drawn inward. I looked at the girl and could see her upper lip trembling. The muscles around her mouth were tensing more and more, and a weird grimness it looked as if the mouth was being drawn inward. I'd never seen it before. She had a hard time continuing to talk, but she did nevertheless. "Mr. Holmes," as she spoke in a muffled speech, "all the birds seemed gone. I could see some squirrels run away as if they were terrified, and a breeze which was there, slightly touching my skin, disappeared completely. It was as if I was in a vacuum." Holmes did not show any sign of surprise, yet he set his chair opposite the girl and looked in her eyes, folding his hand in his characteristic way. "Just tell me what you see," he continued. This seemed to awaken some clarity in the eyes of the girl, and a voice started to speak normally again. She described the following scene. "Trees seem to be unearthed. I have no better word for it, as their roots seem to out-wrestling their soil, and their crown treetops started to swing back and forth rather violently, and once they were done, their roots broke loose, and they actually started walking towards me, closer and closer, until I could see the fine lines of their bark. Of course, I was terrified at first, but then I felt an immense sadness. I could see strange carvings in their barks, as if they had a message." Holmes indicated to me to take notes. His eyes, very concentrated, continued to look at the girl, and he replied, "Pray, do continue." The girl's eyes brightened up. It became a sequence of meaningless characters, yet they looked more and more like a secret language. Holmes gestured me to present pen and paper and gave it to the girl. "Please write down what you see," he resumed. The girl did so, scribbling characters on a piece of paper. I think it were altogether some 20 characters. She then quickly continued, slightly out of breath, "And these characters, they started to circle around, faster and faster. It became a chain, and then the chain was wrapped around my neck as a necklace." I could feel the panic in the girl's stories, yet, truth must be said, I thought she was fantasizing, as the sequence of letters made no sense to me at all. She continued, "The trees suddenly opened up their crowns and sunlight streamed in. It was as if the branches ringed around the necklace and pulled it off me in one quick movement. The letters fell to the ground and disappeared in the mud. I fainted, I guess, and when I awoke, everything seemed normal again." Holmes told the family to come back the next morning, as he said he needed time to investigate the matter. He made me puzzle over the letters, the characters, all night, while he looked into the fire in a strange type of trance, walking up and down the room, opening and closing books, random it seemed, and from time to time telling me to continue to puzzle. Early that next morning I begged Holmes to let me give up, as I could not make head or tails of the sequence. I had come up with the following alphabet sequence, but could not create any useful words from them. To my surprise, he replied, "Good. Then no, you can understand the truth. I will explain everything once the family is here." We had breakfast, and I could hardly keep my eyes open when the family arrived, eager to hear the result. Holmes asked the family a question. "What is the origin of the name Black Forest Hill?" The mother answered, "But it was rather strange, as it was given to the area by the last owner of the house." "He must have been inspired," Holmes mumbled. "And I found your answer," Holmes then continued. "You must understand that the trees from the Forest Hill are not originally from there. Actually, they have been imported from Poland, and, as far as I can see, the hill is artificial. The trees are therefore not their original surroundings, and that makes them angry. They do not belong on the hill, yet they have been there for quite some time, at least 5 centuries. And someone, probably even more than one person, has carved in their bark a message, and a desperate one at that. Watson showed me this morning that the sequence is indeed Old English alphabet from the 15th century. The sequence read as PFSXROOXQOESWIIGSG, and it makes no sense at all. This is because it was a type of necklace given to women by certain churches in the 15th century to ward off witchcraft. Yet it also ushered in the beginnings of a private acquisition. Your daughter is at that age in which she is sensitive to spiritual activity and received a message from the past, as obviously the women who were given this item sheltered in the forest from the witch hunter and carved the sequences in the tree barks to leave the message of being pure, hoping this will end the persecution. The father was astonished, and so was I, to be honest. But I was too tired to rationalize. And the father continued, "But what, Mr. Holmes, should we do? Should we sell the house?" "Oh, no," Holmes replied. "If you do that, some other poor creature will get through the same audacity. There are only 2 things you can do." "What is that, Holmes?" I could express somewhat in despair of him being exposed as a fool. Holmes just smiled. "Well, you could unearth the trees and send them back to Poland, though I think you do not consider that a real option. Or you could stage a ritual and establish a memorial, which you honor the women that were victimized over there. This would quiet their spirits and give a new meaning to the forest, easing the trees and giving them a purpose to grow on unfamiliar ground." The father looked at Holmes doubtful, as if this was an idiotic solution. But then Holmes resumed. "If you are clever, you make it into a shrine for tourists, and earn a quick buck as well with it." Upon which the father burst into laughter and gave Holmes an in-between conspiratorial look and replied, "Indeed we will do so, Mr. Holmes. My daughter will never have to walk in the forest alone." The mother looked at the father with a hopeless gaze, yet Holmes gave the doctor a blink of an eye moment, and she immediately understood. "Thank you, Mr. Holmes," she said. "This will ease all parties." The family thereupon left. I looked at Holmes with a baffled expression. He explained, "My description of the situation was totally correct, of course, and the girl was completely real with her description. It happened exactly as she told us." "You mean," I replied, "you did not simply tell the story to release the girl of her burden?" "No, Watson, I was absolutely serious. As you should know by now, rational objectivity is a gain for material goods. The spiritual cares little about time and space. But Holmes, I replied, unsatisfactory about the outcome, feeling that there still was something missing. What about the message? Did it not have any meaning other than the sequence of signs? Oh, but it did, dear Watson, it did, Holmes said with a big grin on his face this time. It said, "Where shall we trees meet again? In storm, in thunder, or in rain?"